Welcome to Radio Tony and the Passion Project. Join us live each week as we journey into the world of passion. Want to live life passionately? Finding your passion could be the difference between living life in the everyday and living life with meaning and purpose. Take these weekly lessons into life and business. Interact with your host, Tony Lontis, and her Passion Project facilitator, Peter Wallman, as we conduct a passion mapping exercise with Tony live on air. Passion is everything. Good morning, everyone, and I'm Tony Lontis, and you're back on Radio Tony and the Passion Project. And this morning, I have an absolutely wonderful guest to introduce to you, and her name is Robin Suter, and she is another of our amazing passion mapping coaches, and she has a rather fascinating story. So she has a background in teaching, including most of the rural areas of Bathurst, Canberra, Dubbo, into the inner western suburbs of Sydney and the outer western areas. And during her teaching time, she decided that she was really passionate about free expression. And she went on to get a grad diploma in education studies, focusing on the expressive arts in primary school, specializing in dance. She choreographed hundreds of performances and developed a whole language teaching methodology using the arts as a creative method of immersing children passionately into the subject areas of learning. She discovered later in life that she loved running and has since gone on to compete in multiple masters athletic games across Australia and overseas. And she's begun writing a book about her passion to run. So I'd like you all to give a big world welcome to Robin Suter. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, Tony. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly. You're great. Wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me today.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Your story is interesting in that you took up running quite later in life and you've had such success for that. But before we get into your journey with running, what started your passion mapping journey?
Oh, that was interesting because I have two beautiful sons, and my oldest son, Vincent, was playing chess and really developing his expertise as a young person, starting to compete actually against adults when he was only 10 years old. And one thing led to another, and somehow we met Peter Wallman. And Peter had an active involvement in the Chess Association. And so I met him, we had a conversation, and at that time I did a passion map with him because I was sort of at crossroads with my life. I had two beautiful boys, a gorgeous husband, everything. You know, I had my profession. I was fit and healthy. Yes. I had a home. I had all the things that you generally think is what you want. But I felt that there was something missing. And so I kind of was reaching out and seeking, you know, where do I go from here? What is the most important thing in life, and what should I be doing? So that's kind of where things began for me in terms of the following a passion and kind of finding a new direction. Yeah. So I went on from.
Go on. Sorry.
I just went from teaching into early childhood, and then from there. Strangely enough, there's a story behind it, but I became a personal trainer, and that was the critical turning point. And everything that I had done previously to that point, I could see why I had done everything, and it just seemed to project me forwards into my personal training, which then projected me more into the running, and then to become a coach, a sprint coach. And my journey still continues with that concept of individualized learning. And I realized that personal training and sprint coaching and running coaching and things like that have really helped for me to enjoy that that perspective professionally. And I think it's been great because I've watched individuals really flourish, and I felt really good about that. So it's a two-way thing. I've got better with my running, and I've been able to give.
So effectively, you're using all those years of education and teaching, but just incorporating your passion. So kind of, I can absolutely see where that teaching background and expressive dance and that have all combined to the new what you do. And you actually have your own gym now, don't you, Robin?
Yes, I have had a gym for quite a few years, just a little boutique gym. Yes. And what happened was that I attracted a lot of people of similar age to myself, women going through menopause, and I had a lot of people that had come from counseling, suffering from depression, or had medical issues, which kind of led me to expand out into senior fitness. And so I do some classes, which I absolutely love. And then I people said, oh, you should do classes. So I threw in Pilates and Tai Chi and circuit classes. And we had such a fun time. And then I got too many people coming to me, so I had to go to another space. And then I had to get more trainers to work for me. And it was all very exciting. But gradually I decided that me personally moving forward, I didn't want too much baggage. I didn't want to be too down, like sort of feeling pressured with many responsibilities.
I was going to ask you about that transition from being more of a sole entrepreneur to having lots of other coaches and people under you. So I'm understanding that you sort of decided that that was not quite a balance for you, and you've drawn back a bit to be more just you and your own clients.
Yeah, individually. And I guess the interesting thing is that I realize that I'm a very competitive person, but I'm highly focused. And when I train and when I work and when I prepare in my study here, I like everything to be quiet around me, and I go into myself 100% internally, and then I think about who I'm going to be teaching, training, coaching, whatever, and I become one with that person. So I morph myself into their body, into their soul, and then I try to imagine what they want.
Yes.
And then I because I get to know people's lifestyle and work, what they don't like, what they do, and so on. And so then basically I can construct a periodized program or just a single session, whatever it might be that I'm working on. And I find that I can, it adapts. And so as a result of that, I've had fantastic relationships. People just keep coming back. They feel empowered. They feel I'm just, you know, I totally understand them. And so as a result, I found that working in a gym was lovely, but me personally, I get a lot more satisfaction just operating, you know, more as an individual person. So that's kind of, I guess, the personal training and the coaching, the spin-off has been kind of how I've done it,
Robin, are your clientele more middle-aged or older, or do you have some young clientele as well? What do you enjoy more?
Well, it's a good question because I'm 61, and when I thank you. When I started to become a personal trainer, I only went to study when I was about 48, and then I realized I was going to be hitting 50, and I thought, oh my God, no one's going to come to me. I'm too old. So I was terrified.
Not true.
And then I realized, well, I've got to train and other people are my age. So anyway, what happened was that I sort of just took whatever work came to me. Initially, it was people in their sort of 40s and 50s and then 60s.
Yes.
Then I added into the seniors. So I've trained people right up to my oldest client was 99 years old, which is pretty extraordinary. And the people that I do in classes range right up to in their early 90s. And
isn't that awesome?
Yeah. But because I've got all my education background, yes, primary teacher, and having run an early childhood centre for 10 years,
yes,
I am very comfortable with all ages. So yeah, I have a whole range of people. So at the moment, I train, just for example,
yeah,
a family group of children, 5-year-old, 9, 11, and 13-year-olds.
Yes.
Then I have, say, another little girl, she's just turned 11, some other athletes around the sort of 12, 13 years of age. I have a young netballer who wants, yes, to really try to shine. She's 21. Yep. I have a 29-year-old touch footy player who, yes, I coach. I was, yep, coaching a young male football player, quite a famous young man, who plays for Seahawks in Sydney. He's probably, yeah, about 24 now, so I was training him for quite a long time. Groups, netball groups, soccer groups. So I've got PT clients sort of in their 50s and recently a new athlete who's 56, a female, yeah, who wants to become a sprinter. So it's really interesting. Like one of my clients, Catherine, she's about to turn 50. Most of, yes, my clients I've known for at least 10 years. And so, yeah, I knew her when she was 40. And I guess people come to me all ages,
yes,
and male and female. So I have a balance of both, young and old. I probably tend to attract more likely the younger athlete. But I'm finding the 20-year-old, 20 to 30 bracket, really love what I have to offer because, yes, I can drive them. Yes. And then probably around that, you know, depending what they want, mid-20s to mid-30s, they probably find other people. But then when they get a little, uh-huh, bit through that prime, yes, adult, young adult phase, yes, then I seem to notice that I'm getting people more of that sort of 40 onwards.
Yes.
And, yeah, once people meet me, they tend to then recommend a brother or a, yeah, sister or other members of the family. So I end up training all the kids, whatever.
Fantastic.
So I just will do what anybody asks me and I try to adapt.
Yes.
And,
yeah,
that's how I work. Yeah.
So obviously you're passionate about running. From my perspective, I have never been a runner. So except maybe perhaps long distance many, many, many moons ago.
Uh-huh.
But do you think that running can assist most people, or are there some people that will never be good at running?
A great question. So as a human being, we are all adept and able to run.
Okay.
We are physically capable and physiologically should run. It's
okay.
It's the best thing that one can do. However, some people, it's like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make
yes.
it drink. So some people would prefer not to run. And so
yes.
from the personalities that I have met and trained over the
yes.
years, I've discovered that some people are perhaps more effective or interested in exercise in the water. So they're more
yes.
swimmers.
Yes.
And then some people prefer cycling. So
uh-huh.
we've got three kind of key types of personalities that I
yes.
tend to come across: the runner, the swimmer, and the cyclist. And
okay.
within that, those people also have, there are some people that want to weight train and some
yes.
people that won't go there. And
yes.
then there are some people that understand cerebrally that they yes. should exercise,
yes.
and then those that will exercise. So yes. it's the people that are operating in their brain that don't know what's going on down below. They're the people that come to me because they uh-huh. can't make themselves move. And so yeah. I get them through that. I hate exercise, biz, and make it fun. But okay. yeah, if you wanted to run, you could do it, but it has to come from a personal desire. You have to okay. probably have a goal, and the goal might be, I'd like to run because I'd like to know, can I do that? Could I become a runner? And that mm-hmm. If you felt that that was enough of a goal, which to me it is, you can mm-hmm. become passionate about that, and you can go, I want to see myself as a runner. I'd really like to run. I'd like to become a runner. And then I'd like to know, what will that give me? What will that bring into my life? How will that improve me or make me feel a better person? And what will that journey be?
I was just going to say, what are some of the reasons that people develop that love for running? Again, asking from a non-runner's perspective, I have yeah. brothers who were extraordinary runners, and it just never worked for me. So I'm fascinated by your love of running and what it brings to you and what it brings to those that you coach yeah. about running.
Two things. Uh-huh. Firstly, life is quite hard sometimes, and
yes.
often we hit a wall, and yes. It's hard to explain it, but for me, mm-hmm. when I run or when I hurdle, because I hurdle as well,
yes,
it's like I see that wall and I'm going to break through that wall. I'm uh-huh. not going to let that wall stop me. And uh-huh. so for me, running is the challenge that gives me the strength to push through life challenges.
Okay.
So there's something, for me, running is far beyond running. It's just okay. the impetus for my mind control. So as a sprinter, I have to be very focused, dedicated, yes. driven. I have to be routine and so on. But it hurts. It's really hard.
And, yeah.
and so every time I train, I have to go, come on, Robin, you can do this. I have to become my own coach, step outside okay. of myself and say, now you're going to do these and you're going to do them to the best of your ability. That's what you tell your kids or your yes. athletes. And so you're going to do the same thing. You're going to lift. Come on, lift, 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 lift. And so I'll talk myself through a physical barrier, so to speak. So that wall is like a kind of an emotional or
yes.
intellectual barrier.
So even for you, it's hard?
Yes, very
even for
challenging.
You, training is hard?
Training is hard. Plus I want it
That's
to be hard.
That's encouraging to hear.
Yeah, and I have pain and I go, oh, no, I don't want to train today because
yeah.
I'm tired. But then I think, well, I've made this goal. I've made a commitment.
Yes.
I've made a commitment to myself. I'm not going to let myself down. And so if I miss the training today, I can never make it up again. So I do, if I really don't want to train, I'll stretch uh-huh. or I might go and have a massage or I might meditate or
okay.
Or I'll do something completely different, like I'll do something for the family or I'll send mm-hmm. some messages to friends or something special. But the running, another thing I want to tell you was that
yes.
many years ago I was yeah. sitting on a plane and I was talking to the person sitting next to me and mm-hmm. he was such a lovely young man and he was living in Paris and he said, oh, I've been running a little bit. And then we talked about running. It just
yes.
happened. And uh-huh. then he said, he told me about his work. And then somehow he told me he got quite depressed
yes.
and he'd found the running had been really helpful. And then I told him about my sprinting and, you know, how I'd sort of been, I was chasing my dream and,
yeah.
you know, wanted to become a really great runner and I wanted to see
yes.
where it would take me. And we were both flying to Tahiti. I was going to compete at the Oceania Championships, and he was flying to Tahiti because there was going to be an eclipse, and he wanted to see the eclipse. He was a photographer, photographed them. And the conversation about the running shared a number of things with me, between us. One was that we both had running in our lives. We were using them in similar ways to kind of get through our difficult daily grind and the moments when you feel blue and down. But also, it just gave us that lift, and it just somehow, I don't know, kept us sort of moving along. And so one of his passions was chasing eclipses, and mine, you know, is chasing the elusive gold medal.
Yes, which you've got lots of, by the way, haven't you? You've been very successful.
Yeah. So I guess it's a hard question to answer, you know, in terms of why do people run and can everybody run? But all I can say is that you get lovely physiological changes, like the endorphins. You feel good, you feel better. And something happened to me in my 50s on a mental level. I started to become really conscious of my weight. I wanted to be, I wanted to compete well. So then I realized I had to have a good diet and so on. And then I thought to myself, I can't go there. Diet's not me. I'm into what can my body do, not what my body looks like. And so I thought, how about I play an internal game? And what I'll do is I'll get on the scales and I'll look at my metabolic age. And so I challenged myself to keep my metabolic age really young through running. So I thought, I wonder if that couldn't be. So I've been averaging between metabolically the age of 21 and 35. So I'm probably, I haven't checked it lately, I'm probably a bit older now metabolically, but I'm generally internally on the scales pretty young. And then I've met some beautiful, you know, older people, and some, you know, how sometimes you meet an older person and they just, there's something youthful about them. I mean that comes in a lot of different ways, but some of them, when you ask them how old they are, they're like 94 or whatever, and they seriously just don't look it. They look 10 or 15 years younger. And so part of it's physical and part of it's mental, emotional. But the metabolic youthfulness that you get from running enables, I believe, us to have an improved quality of life, and I'm sure helps with aging. And certainly is helping me. I don't get sick as often. And, you know, I can manage myself better on that, you know, health level. One thing too is that I do get a bit blue. You know, I get a bit down at times. And I think that's part of my flip side of my personality, drive, be full on. And so I find that I run hard for the intensity, but then sometimes I'll run gently for the soul. And then I have to have recovery. And the recovery is part of improving performance, because that's when the body heals, the muscle fibers, you get stronger after exercise. But also I will use that recovery to settle myself down and kind of rediscover my equilibrium and find that internal harmony, that nice place to work from. And so, yeah, being if I get down in the dumps, I go and exercise, and usually running is part of that, or strength training, or combining.
Okay, I've got two more things I want to try and get in before we run out of time.
Yes.
One of those is, again, from a non-runner perspective, what are some of the things you can do if you were interested in starting to run? What would the process be from a non-runner whose most exercise is walking, what would be the steps that you would follow to start on the path of running regularly? I've lost Robin. That's no good. I might try and get Peter on early. I was going to ask Robin about the steps to ensure that if you wanted to start running, what you would do and what you would follow. Unfortunately, Robin has dropped off Zoom, and not a lot we can do about that. Something else that I wanted to ask Robin about was that, and from one of our response from some of our listeners was, ask Robin about her amazing bespoke kangaroo hop that she does at the beginning of her competitive runs that totally disarms her opponents and delights her many fans. If it's at all possible to get Robin on again, I'll ask her that. Otherwise, we might try and get that up into one of the Facebook Lives. So I understand that we've lost Robin on the feed, so I'll try and get Peter up live. Hello, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
Unfortunately, we've lost the delightful Robin. Her feed has dropped out just as it was getting interesting, but I did only have two more things to ask her, and I was going to ask her about her kangaroo hop when she does competitive races and how someone who doesn't run actually starts to get themselves used to running and what that might, the sorts of things that might bring about in their lives. But it would appear that poor Robin has lost the feed, and so we'll have to leave it there. How are you, Peter?
I'm good, actually. I'm good. I've seen this hop that you've mentioned.
Yes.
And she does that in world championships. She competes in world championships and everywhere. So it's rather beautiful to have Australia represented that way.
She gets
medals against former gold medalists in the Olympic Games. Yeah. She's not bad.
Yeah, and that seems to be a lot to do with her mindset and her discovery of how much she loves to run. So that's very obvious that that's her passion, and a really great example of combining your passions with your everyday life, so that she's like that complete passion driven person who uses that to get those great results for her clients and for herself, obviously.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, and where does that drive come from? I can well remember working with her and in this time of really no clear way forward. Here she comes again, actually.
Yay, that's
so
fantastic.
I'll leave you to finish that off, and I'll touch base with you in a little while.
I would love to finish that off if that's okay. Hello, Robin.
Oh, sorry, I don't know what happened there.
That's okay. That's just technology, and it's live radio, and anyone who listens to live radio know that it never goes very smoothly. And of course, Zoom, everyone's on Zoom at the moment, so it kind of has that little dropout. So yeah. Peter just come on, and we just finished. So I'll go back to that question. So the question of two more things that I wanted to talk to you about, and one was for someone who is a non-runner, what are your recommended steps for getting them into a pattern of running, even if it's just slow running and not the beautiful, graceful sprint running that you do?
Yes, I understand. Look, the first thing would be just to go nice and easy, just a bit of walking and a little bit of light jogging. And maybe it might be 2 minutes of walking and 1 minute of jog, and just repeating that pattern. And that could be repeated for 20 or 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's one idea, and you can vary the amount of sort of walk to run. And so that kind of becomes a bit of a program then. That's one way of gradually moving to a point where you then might run for 2 or 3 minutes and walk for 1 or 2 minutes, so you start to change over time. until gradually you can knit it together 5 minutes and maybe walk a couple of minutes, 5 minutes and so on, building, building, building. And another thing you can do is a little bit of strength work to get the hips and the glutes, the legs strong so that they can cope with a little bit of increased intensity. Some people may need a personal trainer for that, but they're, you know, simple exercises, leg lifts and, you know, lifting the leg out to the side, abduction, very important, and bridge lifts, simple things to help get stronger in the butt and the hips. Some people might want to do some swimming in the pool, but actually pool running, using a buoyancy vest and actually running for a long period of time in the deep end and learning to actually run, working their arms, moving their legs, or even just walking and running up and down a shallow pool. And I guess joining a little group of, you know, learn to run is another option. It's probably quite a good idea to perhaps, you know, go with a friend and try to, you know, have a little challenge. And another thing that you can do is play the fartlek game, which is fartlek is a technical approach to running where, for better runners, it's used where over, say, like for a 5K, 10K run, they may not run that far, but they might do a 5K. And in that, you run really fast to that tree up the road. And then you reduce your speed to the telegraph pole. Then you sprint to the next hill and then you jog down to the valley. So so fartlek is about just varying speed.
Like interval training.
So there's that option. Then there's a bit of technique is a good idea. So when you run, you want to have the foot landing under the hips, never in front of the body. So there's a couple of important technical things that will help to prevent injury. That's really important. So
that was my next question. If you're older and you've got, you know, some trouble with your knees and stuff, you're still saying that it's still possible to do some running even with knee, hip, foot problems if you're careful?
Yes. And I mean, like if you're older, you know, one idea might be, say, for example, over a course of a week, Monday, you might try to do the walk run just nice and easy on a flat surface, even around an oval. And then, you know, how many laps you've done in a course of 30 minutes or an hour, whatever it is you'd like to do. Then maybe the next day you might go to the pool and do some pool running with a buoyancy vest and do some different exercises to try to use the pool to give the body freedom, flexibility, mobility of, you know, range of motion without hurting the joints. Perhaps then on Wednesday, if you had a personal trainer, you might do some strength exercises that would contribute to improving the muscular strength of the hips and the glutes and the abdominal muscles and so on. And then maybe on the Thursday, you might do a yoga class to help really develop strength, strength and stretch. And then perhaps on the Friday,
some Pilates.
You might try, you could do something else, or like, for example, like a cross training. If you like to skip rope, you could try using the skipping rope. Or you could just try that run walk again and then just sort of cycling through, and then with the goal that, and like trying to maybe go from two or three of those sort of running sessions in a week, gradually over time building to maybe four and then gradually to five. If you're moving to that point, then you should be able to run easily for, you know, 20 or 30 minutes at a very easy jog. And then, and then just when you can comfortably run maybe a 7K run in about 50 minutes or so,
then
maybe that's when you go, all right, now I'm going to start to train with some goals in mind and try to do that distance. But I'm going to try to bring my time down by 5 minutes and then work on that. And then when you gradually have got that down, you chip away. You give yourself a year and just chip away at it. And that way you won't hurt yourself.
Effectively, Robin, you're saying that anyone has the ability to run at any age, and you can most certainly help them with any of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had a man who came to me. He was probably in his 40s. This was quite a few years back now. And he said, I've never run, but I've always wanted to. Can you help me? And we kind of went through that. We did that process of walk, run. And it was fantastic. And, you know, he just went on and on and on. And hopefully he's doing marathons now.
Fantastic. But
yeah, it's if you see the running as a healing process, as something beautiful that gives you more than just weight loss, it gives you an opportunity to lose yourself. When you run, you can go on a holiday. So you can stop your work, go on your run, and forget about the world. And it's like you've got on a plane, gone to Bali for a week, come back, and then you're ready to rip into it again. So, you know, it's important to, if it's not running, it's something, got to be something else, but you need that time out.
Yeah.
But anybody can do it.
Sorry, Ronnie, I've got one final comment to ask you about before we run out of time. Mia asked us to ask you about your kangaroo hop that you do before your competitive runs that disarms your opponents and delights your fans. So can you quickly tell us about the kangaroo hop in your competitive runs?
Oh, yeah, thank you. When I was in Hungary in Budapest, I was doing really well with my races at the Indoor World Masters Athletics Championships. And we wear our green and gold, we represent Australia, even though we are an individual and we have to foot our own, you know, costs and everything. Anyway, I just for my first race, I was just standing on the 200 meter bend ready, and the camera crew come past you, and you get they sort of interview you, like, and here's so and so from America, and here's Robin Sutter from Australia in lane five, and da da da. And so when they brought the camera to me, I put my hands here and went like that and jumped up and down, and then they laughed it. And ever since then, whenever they see me, they remember the girl in the green and gold.
Yes.
And so at each of the different places, they kind of almost expect me to do that. And what I realized was, after having just done it the first time, what it did was it really helped set up my plyometric spring. So basically, you want to do something where you're like, it's a reactive jump that you're doing, and you're basically wanting to push into the ground to propel yourself forward. So it's just a little physical preparation to remind my body, we're going to be hitting that ground hard in a second and pushing forward. So it helped settle the nerves, but it also helped me prepare physically for
Robin,
the race.
Wonderful. And I'm going to be watching when I notice that any Masters Athletics are on the TV. I'm going to be looking out for you now, and I expect to see that kangaroo hop. We are right out of time. I've got to let Peter come on. Thank you so much for coming on Radio Tony and the Passion Project. It's been an absolute delight to have you live with us today. And I'll let Peter say goodbye. Over to you, Peter. Thank you so much, Robin.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Peter.
Hi, Robin. Lovely to sit and listen to you telling your stories. And, it's been beautiful to watch your journey. And thank you very much for sharing what you have to share. I'm sure listeners or what
amazing or, nuggets of wisdom in that this morning, Robin.
Yeah, and I can't thank wait you. Your book to come out. What's the yes. name of the book again?
Oh, A Passion to Run. And the publisher is Austin McCauley. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that in the middle of the year it'll be ready. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to sharing that with everybody. That's fantastic. A little bit about my journey. And yeah.
And how can people find that? They'll find it in bookshops, will they?
Yes, when they'll. On my website and on your website, I'll be promoting it as best I can, and I'll hopefully do some radio book club.
Yes, I'll sort of promotions. When you've got that book, Robin, just reach out and let me know, and I'll fantastic. Have you on any of my Radio Tony shows.
Oh, thank you so much. That'd be lovely.
It would be my pleasure.
Great, thank you. I'm really looking forward to sharing it.
Okay. Peter, we better get on and talk about our project, or we'll have Robin on for the whole show, which would be just delightful.
I'll go now.
Thank you, Robin.
Thanks you. A lot. Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
I can't believe how quickly these shows go, Peter. Seriously, we just are looking at the time going, oh my goodness, I need to talk to Peter and I just want to keep talking to Robin.
you could interview her for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah. Would you like to go back and discuss what we did yesterday?
Yep, absolutely.
And that was about purpose.
It was.
I won't bring the deep dive model up, but basically, you know, this is the third real yes. section, and there were two preliminary ones before that, so
yeah,
it's about a month in, I guess. And it was a beautiful session, I thought, and
it was such good fun.
So why don't you tell, you know, just say what was in it for you.
Yeah, can I show them? I'm happy to show my passion map if you're okay.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
So the next part of the passion mapping process is to actually have this beautiful map. And in the week before, we'd sorted out all of my passions and I'd had a very clear image of what that would look like. And so my image was about the rays of a rising sun over a green natural environment and the sea. And that's what I drew. And in putting all of those elements of my different passions on my own map, then Peter and I started to explore what would become my individual purpose or vision statement. And I'd explained to Peter that I'd had my own mission statement, which is kind of old now. So I think I developed that back in 2007, I think. And so my original vision was to create beauty within myself and others with humility and love. And so Peter and I, as part of my passion mapping process, explored whether that was still the same, whether it still rang true, or whether it was a little different. And what we ended up with was a version of that same vision statement, which will become my purpose statement, and it focused more on me. So my new one is, I create beauty and joy within myself and others by practicing unconditional love and acceptance. And that really excites me, and it made me really happy to see that there were still elements of what I originally thought, so still very much Tony and very uniquely Tony, but I feel this evokes a stronger bodily reaction in me, and it seems to have more clarity and a strength of purpose around it. Is that something that you find, Peter, with people, that that their own personal purpose statement takes on a deeper meaning after doing the passion mapping process?
Yeah, I think so. And I'll go back to my metaphor, which is a river and
yes,
different creeks and streams of our passions feed into this big river of life and mm-hmm. our life force. And then as that moves, it's guided by purpose.
Yeah.
So the purpose is the banks of the river. And then if you have lots of passion and no purpose, it can go anywhere. It can be quite destructive.
That's right.
But if you have passion, if you have purpose and no passion, you don't go anywhere. Nothing happens. Yep. And so they're two different components. And I think it's really important they work together. And it seemed yes. to me that when you went through that, you had a strong sense, yes, that's right for me.
Yeah.
And that's
and reading it again to you this morning, I still feel that same depth of feeling that it's completely right for me.
Sure. And it could be that in 20 years' time, it still is. Mm-hmm. However, it might change, but it's likely yeah. that it's lasted a long time in one form.
Yes.
With a sense of creating beauty and joy.
Yeah.
And you know, that's you to a T, you know, like it's as the sort of the coach or the facilitator yes. of this, I also want to feel that that's you, just as when you yes. get your passion map,
yes.
that's Tony. And I remember you had that strong sense when you did your passion map. Yeah, this is Tony. This
yeah.
is me. And so, yeah, the two go together and it's remarkably stable, a sense of purpose.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I think we have a video for people who want to learn more about it, you know, as yes. a giveaway. And I find it's a really important part of the program. And if you go back to the metaphor, a vision is really what can you see into the future? What can you see yourself doing? Or how can you see the world at some point in the future that you can see in yeah. your mind? And of course, that keeps you focused too, as well as...
I was just going to say, I am looking forward to using the map and my purpose statement to help with some decisions about life path. Will I do this or will I do that? And knowing that I've got that map there with my purpose statement and going, okay, well, that actually doesn't fit in so well, or yes, that definitely fits in. That's probably something I should consider. For me, it's almost a new way of thinking and guarding myself, because at the end of the day, I'm a people pleaser and I say yes more often than not when I should probably say no. And I'm looking forward to having that tool, i.e. the passion map, to help me make those decisions and be more clear around my life and my life's purpose.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I think a lot of people at the moment are making decisions and realizing they can't make it based on what they see outside themselves, based
yes.
on their life, based on what people tell them. They have to reach into themselves.
Yeah.
That's where their truth is. That's yeah. where they know how to say no.
Yeah.
That's where they know how to say yes. And I would be hopeful that that would be something very useful for you ongoingly.
Oh, there's no doubt for me that it will be. Yeah.
And I think as many women are taught not to say no.
Yes.
To be pleased. And sometimes it's really hard for them to learn to say no, but it's so important.
It has been a real struggle for me to learn boundaries and learn to say no with conviction and actually self-compassion. So I've always gone yes, 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 and then it's had some sort of detrimental impact on me, i.e. not getting enough sleep or being too busy that I don't do my self-care, those sorts of things. I know that there's probably lots of men out there who say yes all the time too, but it does seem to be a predominantly female struggle that we don't have great boundaries and we don't know how to say no. And this is just another tool that will help me. I know that will help me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's so important to live a fulfilling life, to say yes to life.
Definitely.
To say yes to opportunities that are a bit scary, that are going to stretch us.
Yes.
And when we've got a, you know, a head saying, no, you know, that's scary, or I'm going to say yes to something else, you know, we take away from our own life's joy and purpose. And if you're into creating beauty and joy in yourself and others, that's you're gonna need that, aren't you?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm listening to Robin this morning talking about running, and I am so not a runner. I'm just so not a runner. But the way that she talks about it, because she's passionate about it, it makes you want to go, oh, gee, could I really run? Oh. That sort of thing, because it's her passion, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's infectious.
Yes.
It's infectious, and it doesn't really matter what the passion is. If people are living it, it's infectious. I remember, I've never been a great supporter of boxing, you know.
Yes.
But I ended up working on a passion map for a well-known boxer.
Yeah.
And I was left with this incredible sense of awe.
Yes.
At how grand that his sort of love of boxing was.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about hurting people. It was about being a really good person and loving the exchange. And, you know, again, Robin sort of helped me see running from a different perspective.
Yes.
And I think if you see the world through the perspective of your passions or other people's passions, quite a different world.
Definitely.
And it's really exciting. You know, it's really exciting. And everybody you meet has their passions.
Yeah. So, wouldn't it be good if we had a world where kids were taught about passion in the early part of their life, so that they spent the rest of their life living from a point of passion versus anything else?
Oh, that'd be wonderful. Be nirvana.
We would have a different world, wouldn't we?
We have a different world. And people learn to live lives that aren't their own. And I think there's a lot of anger and hostility. And, you know, it comes from that place. And I think when people are living their own life, they're at peace with themselves. They're at peace for the world. Yeah. I think the world would be totally different. Anyway, that's my crusade in a way, to get passion out there and get people to appreciate it and understand that they can actually work with it.
Yeah.
They can actually use passion for their own well-being, and not only personally but also in their businesses.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because it's a much better way of looking at things. If you know clearly that that's what you love and that's what you enjoy, and you incorporate that more into your life is going to be more enjoyable, more joyous, and the harder times are going to be easier to navigate if you have that constant of, I can go back to doing something I love, and keep you moving forward as well.
Yeah, and I think you get used to it and you don't even think about it after a while. You just do it.
Yeah.
And it feels wrong if you're not doing
it.
Yes. Just like it feels wrong if you're not living your life on purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
And somehow or other, I think we live in a place where it's only when we go over a boundary that we know we know where the boundary is.
Mm-hmm.
So we do something that isn't on purpose and we know, no, we're not going to do that again because it feels wrong.
Yes.
This is not me. Yeah. And it's a very beautiful place, I think.
Yeah. Well, Peter, it looks like we are actually out of time, but before I go, I want to mention for everyone watching this today, either live or in the rerun, we have a couple of freebies today, and you can go on to passionmaps.com/free, and there will be a wonderful video of Peter talking about the power of a highest purpose statement, which is the work that I've done with Peter this week. And there's also a PDF for a 5-step guide to your highest purpose. And I'd encourage those listening today to jump on and grab those giveaways today. And if you jump onto passionmaps.com/freebies, free, you will find them there and grab them, have a look, and if you've got any questions, don't hesitate to contact Peter, who has all the information about Passion Maps, our Passion Map inventor and guru of all things passion. And so that's us out of time this week again. I can't believe it. It really is one of my great joys to talk to you and the team each week on Radio Tony and the Passion Project. And we will be back again, everyone, next week. Same time, same place, VBS Radio. Thanks so much, Peter, and bye, everyone. Thank you for joining us on Radio Tony this week. Tune in next week for the next episode of Radio Tony and the Passion Project. Live streaming each week, part of the journey. Discover your passion, learn about your purpose, and connect with Tony and Peter. This show is proudly brought to you by Passion Maps. https://www.passionmaps.com. That's www.passionmaps.com. Live passionately every day. Use the code TONY to register for your own online deep dive program with Passion Maps. See you all next week. Bye for now.